Okay, so good morning, everyone. My name is Kyle Holst. I'm a legal consultant, so I'll be giving a legal perspective on the GDPR. I work at I4I. We're a legal consultancy firm, and we're specializing in intellectual property law and IT law. And a big part of IT law is, of course, privacy and data protection law. So what will I be talking about today? Well, I'll just start with giving a, generalistic overview of what data protection law is all about in general. What are the key concepts? What are the key definitions that you have to take into account? Then I'll get into the GDPR itself. What is this new framework? Because we've had data protection laws in Europe for over 20 years, but what are the changes that are introduced by this new regulation? And then I'll quickly dive into some other selected topics that might be of relevance. So firstly, data protection law, a overview of the key concepts. So data protection actually closely relates to the right to privacy, but they're actually separate things. So the right to privacy means, in essence, the right to be left alone. So the right to not be wiretapped, the right of your house not being illegally searched without a warrant. But then derived from that is the right to data protection, the right that you are responsible of the data or over the data that relates to you. It was deemed, some 20, 30 years ago that with the advent of personal computing, mainframes, then not only government, but also organizations started collecting huge amounts of personal data. And it was deemed that that data, well, of course, has a huge value and is worthy of some very strict protection. But it is not exactly the same as privacy. It is a bit more specific. It's only about personal data. And so therefore, there were legal initiatives to protect that personal data. And in the EU, already 20 years ago in 1995, we had the European Directive. Now, a directive is more of a sort of guidance that had to be implemented into national law. So we had the Belgian Privacy Act, the French Privacy Act, etc. Of course, this meant that European companies were confronted with a lot of different national laws. They were all sort of the same, but not entirely. So therefore, in 2016, the General Data Protection Regulation entered into force. So a regulation is actually a sort of European law, a European act, and that has direct effects in the European Union. So the English text and all the 28 translations, translations are actually the official text, and that's what you can refer to. As was said, it has already entered into force, but there was a two-year transitional period foreseen just to give companies the opportunity to actually implement this new regulation. But as of May 25th, 2018, all the obligations that we're about to discuss will apply in full. If you haven't marked that date in your calendar already, maybe do it now and start to get ready. I'll sort of give the pointers as what you will have to take into account. What are the main obligations here? So why did we want a new regulation? As I've said, we've had the previous guidelines that were implemented in national law. Well, there were still a lot of differences, which also, introduced sort of forum shopping. So countries, organizations would actually go to a country that was a bit less strict with regards to data protection. So that was something that they wanted to avoid. There was also limited cooperation between the data protection authorities. So data protection authority in Belgium, for example, that's the Privacy Commission. I think in France, that's the CNIL. In the UK, that's the ICO. There was little cooperation. Of course, the directive is 20 years old. There has been a lot of technological changes. For example, big data analytics has become relevant in that time. And of course, they want to further strengthen data subjects' rights. I think that's one of the key takeaways, is that it's all about the data subject and his data and for empowering that data subject. So the GDPR applies to personal data. So it's very important to know what is this concept of personal data. Well, it's any information that relates to an identified or identifiable natural person. So, for example, information on a company number, VAT number, that is not considered personal data, so it's out of scope of the GDPR in principle. Also, anonymous data that does not relate to an identifiable person, that is out of scope of the GDPR, so that's something that's very important to know. But for example, IP addresses and even dynamic IP addresses are considered personal data just because of the fact that it is possible to identify a natural person. And there are, of course, also certain categories, special categories of personal data. So racial or ethnic data, political opinions, health data, those are very more specific kinds of personal data for which stricter rules apply. And actually, the general rule is that you are prohibited from processing those types of data. Of course, there's a long list of exceptions. For example, if you go to the hospital will, of course, be able to process your personal data or your health data based on the fact that, well, they needed to keep you healthy, to keep you alive. So that's an exception there. Now, these personal data, what do we do with it? Well, the GDPR applies to the processing of that personal data. And processing basically is anything that you do with the personal data. So transferring it, storing it, even deleting it are all considered acts of processing. So you have the data subject. You have certain personal data that belong to him. For example, name, date of birth, etc. And those are being processed by two possible entities, either a controller. So, for example, iFry, we have a website where you have a little web form where you can enter your email address in order to subscribe to our newsletter. Well, we are, in that case, the controller because we determine the purposes and the manner of the processing. So the purpose, of course, to send you our newsletter and the manner via a little web form. Another person that can do processing besides the controller itself is, of course, a processor. For example, i4i, again, the same example. Yeah, we're a legal firm, so we want to focus on our core business. So we might want to outsource that activity, the activity of actually sending the marketing or the newsletters to a marketeer, to a third-party firm. Well, if that processor is a separate legal entity from us and processes on our behalf, he is considered a controller. And he will also be subject to certain obligations under the GDPR. So it's important to grasp this difference between the controller and the processor. The processor really is just he executes for the controller. That's the main idea here. So those are the bit of the circle. What happens? What is regulated by the GDPR? So what is the main objective? As I've said, it is to make sure that the individual has the right to make his own decisions regarding to his personal data, the information that relates to him. And the GDPR actually foresees a couple of principles of processing that you will at all times have to take into account. The first one, well, if you process personal data, you have to do it fair and lawfully. That's pretty straightforward, I think. You just have to take into account the law and you have to be fair. But you also have to be transparent. So, for example, in a web context, you have to give information as to what types of processing that you're doing, what transfers that you're doing, for example, giving a privacy policy. In that way, you can be transparent. Another principle is that of purpose limitation. Purpose limitation, that means that if you collect certain data for a specific purpose, you can only use those data for that purpose. So if you collect data, in the same example, just for marketing purposes, well, you can only use that data to send marketing information. You should not be selling that data or doing any other type of processing with it. There's also the concept of data minimization. So again, if you want to send marketing emails, you probably only should be asking for their email address or their physical address, but not other information. You should not be asking for their credit card information if you just want to send a marketing email. So that's an idea of data minimization. Also accuracy, so you should keep the data up to date. There's the principle of storage limitation. You can only keep the data for as long as it's relevant for the purpose. So for marketing purposes, well, longer than 10 years, I don't know if that will probably be, well, it's something that you have to assess yourself based on what you want to do with it. And then finally, integrity and confidentiality. This is actually very much new. The principle of data security, well, it has actually been added as a principle of the GDPR and of data protection. Now, what are the key obligations, the key changes that were actually introduced by the GDPR itself? Well, first, the territorial scope. So as I've said, the GDPR actually applies for the whole of Europe. So within Europe, there is actually a free movement of data. So within those borders, data can move freely. And to determine whether it can move within the EU is if the processing takes place in the context of the activities of an establishment in the EU. So if a company has an establishment in the EU and they do processing within the context of that establishment, well, then the GDPR will apply to them. So a US company that has an office or a branch within the EU, well, if the processing takes place in the context of that establishment, well, then the GDPR will apply to them. But this is, well, one of the new things that have been introduced, even when the data subjects are located in the EU, but the processing or the controller is not in the EU, in that case, the GDPR will still apply to them if they are offering goods or services to the data subject in the EU or monitoring the behavior of data subjects in the EU. So just to give a quick example of this, a Chinese data controller might be offering goods or services because they're targeting the European Union, they have a .eu extension, they offer their goods in euros, they offer it in one of the relevant languages. Well, then the GDPR will apply even to a Chinese or American company, and they have to take into account their rules. Or when they monitor their behavior, for example, through tracking cookies. In that case, the GDPR will also apply to those companies. Maybe a bit less relevant here, since I think most are European companies, but still, something to take into account. Now, if you want to do any type of processing, you will need a legal basis. You will need something to base your processing on. You just can't start grabbing information off of the internet and start working with that. You need a basis somewhere. And one of the main bases for processing personal data is, of course, consent. You just ask of the data subject, hey, can I process this data of you? And then he checks a little checkbox, I hereby consent to the processing of personal data. But of course, there are other legal, well, bases on which you can process personal data. For example, if you're entering into a contract and you provide certain services, well, if you want to ship an item to someone, well, you obviously need their address, so you'll be able to get the goods or services to them. Well, you'll be allowed to use that data to process those data. So keep it into account, but consent is a very important one and has also been changed. So consent has to be freely given. This is actually a bit of an interesting one. For example, taken in an employment context, your employer might ask of you, hey, I want to use your personal data to sell to someone. Can you consent to this? Well, in that case, it might not really be freely given. I mean, who's going to say no to their employer? That's a bit of a delicate situation. So that's something to take into account. But it also has to be specific. You have to know what you're consenting to. Therefore, you also have to be informed. And the consent has to be unambiguous. And it has to be given by a statement or clear affirmative action. So opt-out is no longer possible. I think that's a very important one. So if you want people's consent, they actually have to check the unchecked checkbox. And the proof of consent should be provided by the controller. So you should be able to provide proof thereof. And the consent is also withdrawable. So as easily as someone checks the checkbox, they should be able to uncheck it. And it has to be obtained separately. So again, in a web context, you can't ask for a hereby consent to the general terms and conditions and the cookie policy and the privacy policy. You have to split that up. It has to be obtained separately. And consent for children is also something that has been newly introduced. So where you're asking consent of a child that is younger than 16, you have to, as the parents or the holder of parental responsibility for consent. Now, the rights of the data, subject, this is something that, of course, the controller will have to enforce, that he'll have to make sure that these rights are available. So again, he has the right to transparency, so he has to be informed, provide privacy policies, cookie policies, etc. He can ask, he has the right of access, so he can ask of you what personal data of me do you have. He also has a right to rectify, so hey, this information you have of me is no longer up to date, can you please rectify that information? And there's also, quite importantly, the right to erasure. A lot has been said about that. There's also been coined the right to be forgotten. That was actually introduced a couple of years ago by case law, but that was specifically aimed at internet search engines, so you could have asked of Google to have your results that included your personal data, to have those removed. But now they have a bit more broader right of erasure. So in some cases, you can ask of a controller to actually have those data removed. But there are, I mean, it's not an unlimited right. There are certain restrictions to it. So you can, the possibilities to ask for the erasure are actually limited in the law. So if you're processing the information unlawfully, well, of course, then he'll be able to ask for erasure. Or if there's a legal obligation to erase the personal data, well, then of course he'll have to erase that. But it will also have to be set off against other rights and freedoms, for example, the right of expression. So there's a bit of a balancing act to be done by the controller or by the court of law between either the right to erase the personal data and the right of the data subject, but also the right of the controller, for example, a newspaper to provide certain information, and they have the right to express themselves. So that's a bit of a difficult one. There's also the right to restriction. I'll skip over that. There's the right to data portability. That's very much new and actually quite interesting. So data subjects now actually, in some cases, will have the right to obtain or be given all the personal data that you have of them. The controller is actually obligated to provide that data in a common file format to the data subject itself, so he can do with it whatever he likes. But what is also provided is that, besides the data subject asking for it himself, actually asking, for example, of a Facebook, hey, all my personal data, can you please transfer this to my Google Plus? So that is actually something that is inscribed in the law now, and it's something that companies will have to provide. They will have to make this technically possible. So that's also quite interesting. I'll skip over the other ones. Then controllers and processors. So what are the main obligations of the controllers and processors? Well, these are the most important ones, I think, and the newly introduced. So controllers will have to take into account the principles of privacy by default and privacy by design. So what that means is, if you're starting a new project that involves processing of personal data, well, from the get-go, you'll have to take into account the principles and the rights and obligations that are introduced by the GDPR. So if you start a new project, you have to document and take into account the new legal rules. And also privacy by default. That means that if there's multiple privacy settings, the default setting should be, well, the most privacy compliant. And then there's also this obligation of record keeping, which actually replaces the notification obligation. I think in some countries, and also in Belgium, if you were doing any type of data processing, in principle, you had to notify the DPA. In Belgium, you had to notify the Privacy Commission, hey, we're doing this type of processing. There was a long list of exceptions, but this has actually been expunged and been replaced with record keeping. So controllers now themselves have to keep a record of all the processing that they're doing. So they have to keep really just a list with what personal data do we have, what do we do with it, what are the purposes, do we transfer them somewhere? So you have to keep a record. That record also includes a description of security measures that you have to take. There's also data breach notification, but that's explained further in another slide. You also might have to do privacy impact assessments. The idea is here that if you're starting a high-risk processing activity, Well, then you will have to perform a data protection or a data privacy impact assessment. Yeah, that will involve just going over what is the risk associated with that data processing. So again, that's something that you'll have to take into account. And in some cases, if it follows from that privacy impact assessments, you'll also have to consult your national data protection authority. You also have to appoint a data protection officer. That's also in the next slide. And the principle of data security, again, next slide. I've just put this on a separate slide to explain it a bit further. This data breach notification, I think this is a very important change that was introduced. There's an obligation that if there is a data breach, from the moment that you become aware of it, you have a 72-hour deadline to notify your DPA, your data protection authority. So for example, Belgium Privacy Commission. And you have to give specific information, what was the nature of the breach, what data was impacted by that breach, etc. And you should also document the entire process so that the DPA can actually monitor whether you're compliant. But besides the notification to the authority, in some cases, you might also have to notify the data subject themselves. So you might have to do a mailing, hey, there's been a data breach. Please take the following into account. The main idea is here that the data subject should be able to respond to that breach. For example, if payment information has been breached, well, that they can, in fact, take measures themselves, call their bank, call Cardstop. You only have to do that if there's a high risk to their rights and freedoms. You have to, use clear and plain language, which is not always that easy to do, I guess. And of course, there's a list of exceptions. If you've used encryption, you might not have to notify the subject themselves because then there's the risk is less high to their rights and freedoms. Then the data protection officer is someone that you might have to appoint. Well, in what cases? If you're a public authority or body, you will always have to appoint a DPO because it's maybe a bit less relevant. But so, for example, every municipality will have to appoint a DPO. If you're doing on a large scale, regular and systematic monitoring of data subjects, for example, if you're monitoring a public space via cameras, or if you're extensively using tracking cookies and doing profiling, if you're doing that on a large scale, you'll have to appoint a DPO. Or if you're processing special categories of personal data, so for example, if you're processing large amounts of health data, well, then you'll also have to appoint a DPO. And then what are the tasks of the DPO? Well, the main idea is that he helps with compliance. He'll have to monitor it. He cooperates with the DPA, and he's also the external contact point. So his contact information should be publicly available. Who can be the DPO? There's a bit of discussion on that. I think it is possible that it is someone from within the company, that is an employee who's received proper training, but they should be knowledgeable about data protection law and practice in general. But it can also be an external consultancy firm, for example, who can perform the task of being a DPO. So that's a decision that companies will have to make, whether they go for an internal or external DPO. Then also, again, the principle of data security. There's also an obligation of the controller to provide data security. So you have to ensure at CIA confidentiality, integrity, availability, and also resilience. But you have to implement appropriate technical and organizational measures. Now, the GDPR actually wants to be technology neutral and future-proof, so they do not really give direct, really explicit guidelines. They just say you have to take a risk-based approach, take into account the state of the art, the cost of implementation. For example, if you're only processing not that important data, there's a difference between just regular keeping names or keeping really long list of health data. Well, maybe the security measures will be less strict for the regular personal data. So that's something that you'll have to take a risk-based approach, that you'll have to assess yourself. But they do provide some things that you will have to take into account. You have to look at encryption, pseudonymization. You'll have to do audits and you have to provide backup and redundancy. Now, pseudonymization, that's something that can be quite important, and it is actually mentioned quite a few times within the regulation. It is actually possible in some cases to process personal data beyond the purposes that you collected them for, but then they do suggest that you use pseudonymization. I'll not get into all of these, but that's something to take into account. Yes?
It says that the law is there's a statement saying something about the data about the identifier.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yeah. So it also states something that there are people saying that if you have several sources, which that's not necessarily you are collecting,
mm-hmm.
a combination of the information that you have anonymized. With other external data can still identify the user. So this gives you a sense of feeling that anybody can actually be identified. So we are all affected actually.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the indeed big questions, especially with big data. When is data truly anonymized or truly pseudonymized? I mean, yeah, if you put enough data together and you put machine learning on it, you can probably track that down to a identifiable person. So in that case, the GDPR actually will still apply. So you should be cautious with using pseudonymization or randomization. It should be done properly, but you can never forget the main principle that the moment that someone is identifiable, the GDPR will apply. That's the key takeaway there. Then processor, this is actually something that has been changed. So we have the controller, he determines the means and purposes, and then there's a controller who actually executes on behalf, who processes on behalf of that controller. Well, he also now has some very specific obligations. He will also have keep records, He'll also have to implement data security measures. He will also, in some cases, have to perform a privacy impact assessment or appoint a data protection officer. And he will also have to notify data breaches, but to the controller, who will then in turn have to notify either the DPA or the data subject themselves. And the processor is also directly liable himself. So data subjects can go directly to the courts, who can then to go to processor. So previously you mainly had to go to the controller, but now you can also go directly to the processor. That's quite important. Then something that's also, I think, been in the news quite a lot are data transfers. That's a big part of data protection regulation in Europe. The main idea here is that there is a prohibition to transfer personal data outside of the European Economic Area, the EEA. So the EEA is the 28 member states plus Norway, Iceland, and Liechtenstein, I think. So if you transfer data outside that area, well, generally that's prohibited, but of course there's a long list of exceptions. So first, as a whitelist, so certain companies, I think for example Canada, you can freely transfer data to them because their data protection laws have been deemed to be equal standard with the European data protection laws. And then there's the special case of the US, where they have the privacy shield that actually replaced a previous agreement between the EU and the US, the safe harbor regime. Maybe you've heard of that in the Schrems decision that was abolished. But now we have privacy shield, and that basically means that US companies can self-certify under the privacy shields, and then those companies will be deemed to have data protection standards that are equal to those in Europe. So I think most of the big companies are actually certified under privacy shields. But of course, you might want to transfer personal data to other countries, for example, China, Russia. Well, there you can employ model clauses. I think that's the main one that people use, at least under the directive, is that you just enter into a contract with a US or with a Chinese controller that they will employ proper data protection principles. The other ones are, I think, less relevant. And of course, there's other derogations. You can just ask for the consent of the data subject. Hey, can I transfer your data to China? And if you consent to that, that's fine. So that are the data transfers. And the sanctions. I think this is one of the things that, that has been talked about the most. And I think if you've heard of the GDPR, you have heard of the, well, quite hefty fines that have been introduced. So there are administrative fines that will be put out by the DPAs. So it goes up to 20 million euros or 4% of total worldwide annual turnover over an undertaking. So an undertaking actually also includes company groups. So those fines will be or can be quite quite hefty. But of course, it has to be effective, proportionate, and dissuasive. So they might decide to lower that amount a little bit. So I don't really want to get into real fear mongering here. I mean, the fines are something that to take into account. But yeah, there are means to an end. Just to give the DPAs a bit of a stick behind the door, as you would say in Dutch, I think. But then, besides these administrative fines, you're still liable to private claims by the data subjects to the courts or to the DPA. And there's also a sort of class action lawsuit that has been introduced. So data subjects can actually go to somebody who will then group all of their claims together. And then, so they can jointly go to the courts or to the DPA. And of course, that's still criminal penalties are still possible. So that was also the case already in Belgium under the previous legislation. There were actually criminal penalties. So there were jail time was included there. So that might be provided now by member states. So as you see, it's a regulation. So there's the principle is full harmonization within the European Union. But there's still some wiggle room left for national countries to provide their own specific rules. And then there's the principle of one-stop shop. I think this is interesting for companies that are actually located in multiple EU countries. Well, they'll be able to answer to a lead supervisory authority, so to a lead DPA. So they only have to talk to one DPA, not all DPAs in the countries that they're located. That's the main idea here, I think. Yeah, and then of course there's a consistency mechanism between the DPAs. So there's a sort of the European Data Protection Board, the EDPB, will sort of keep all the DPAs in check, make sure that there's a consistent application of the GDPR within the entire European Union, so that the data can move freely within that union. Then I'll just quickly get into some related acts that might be well of relevance to you. So for cookies, there's actually separate regulation on that, well, separate directive. Cookies in Belgium are regulated by the telecoms law or the e-privacy directive. So besides, so cookies can be used to process personal data. So in that case, you'll have to apply all the rules that we've just discussed from the GDPR if you process personal data via cookies. But even cookies that do not process personal data, language cookies, yeah, any other type of cookies, well, there you will still have to give information and still have to ask for consent. So that's regulated in a different piece of legislation, but both might be applicable. There's also the Network and Information Security Directive. I think that's something to take into account because it also focuses on cybersecurity. So certain companies, certain operators will have to apply stricter data security rules, but it's only if you're in energy, transport, banking, some really important, well, organizations that if they would well be too heavily breached or impacted, that would have a negative impact on European society. So they have stricter rules for these kinds of companies. So if you work or will work for one of these companies, just keep this into account. There are stricter rules there. And employees, I think in the European context, this just goes to show that there's still, again, wiggle room for the national legislators. So in Belgium, monitoring of email is still something that is regulated by a CAO, that's a sort of Belgian legal act. So that is also something that, yeah, is, might not be totally in scope of GDPR. There might still be different national rules there. So to conclude, well, yeah, take action now. I mean, it's a bit over a year. So get on with it, I would say. I think most national DPAs, for example, Privacy Commission in Belgium or the ICO in UK, they have provided a sort of guidelines, step is to take what they've outlined in a bit of bullet points, what should you do. I think one of the most important ones there is just awareness, that's always the first step, become aware of what the GDPR is. So I've hoped that this presentation was a good sort of introduction to what data protection in general is all about. So again, take action now. Not everything has changed. So we've had data protection laws in place already. So if you were compliant before, it will not be the hugest or overly complicated thing to actually achieve compliance with the GDPR. If you were compliant before, it should not be that hard. Of course, there are new obligations, but there are also some burdens that have been removed. As I've said, for example, the notification duty to the DPA that has been removed. You just have to keep records yourself now. So that's quite good. And of course, new technologies introduce new compliance risks, but they can also be used to mitigate those risks. So take proper use of pseudonymization techniques, of anonymization, etc. Yeah, thank you. Are there any questions? I think I have still quite some time left. Yeah.
Question related to the transfers of data. When you are a global company, you have your data stored in the European data center. How does it work then with the US employee that need to access the data? Is that still allowed? Can you download data, or do you
need
to store it online, or how?
Again, there's the general prohibition of transferring it. So actually within companies or group, big company group, the main idea is probably companies will employ model clauses. So they'll just actually enter into contracts between the different companies of the group so that they will employ proper proper data protection principles. I think that's the easiest way to go about that for them too. But it does have to be a transfer of personal data. Actually has to leave the EU. That's important there. Sorry?
Mainly a comment on the question. Mm-hmm. Where the location of the data is stored, that's not. So whether it's stored in Europe,
well, it is where it has to be processed in the context of the activities of the establishment.
And if you look at the,
that's also processing. True, definitely true.
So, and you're right, so you have the DCR between the different companies, and there's also in Europe, there's a list of companies which is not considered as secure, or was it the term that they use?
There's a whitelist of countries that you can freely transfer to. But I think for US companies, I think also if you, for example, think you use Dropbox or Google or Microsoft services, most of those companies are certified under Privacy Shield. So you should be covered there. Okay. Any more?
You mentioned in the beginning a number of things that are specific for government and public sector.
Yes.
In the legislation, this is also the DPA, has the liberty to determine whether they are giving the administrative fund, they would give an administrative fund to them or not. And then secondly, you can go to a court, if there is a fine, they actually decide to actually give that to the process. Example, keeping is even using Office 365 or Microsoft controller. What is your view on that? That's going to happen because the DPA has a liberty to not fine.
Yeah. That's very hard to say. I think, at least in Belgium, they're actually working quite hard on reforming the DPA to also get them up to date with the GDPR. But there's been very little guidance about what strategy they're going to take. I think last week or 2 weeks ago, there was a proposal in Belgium by De Bakker to reform the Privacy Commission. and to actually allow to give them sort of investigative powers. But the strategy that they're going to use, that's hard to predict. And most people, well, especially with regards to the fines, are looking at what happens with competition law. Well, yeah, some 10, 20 years ago, when that was introduced, they did target very specifically the big companies, the Microsoft, Googles of this world. They really went after the big guys to sort of set an example. So that is, yeah, that's something that we might expect, but I do not know this for certain, of course, but that is to be expected, that they'll go after Facebook, that they'll go after Microsoft, and then hope that the other companies will fall in line, follow suit there. That's something it we'll have to see. We can't make any predictions there. Yes?
From a user point of view, just an example, what would change, for example, on Facebook in the end of May next year? From my point of view. What would they have to do to get all of that implemented so that
Well, I think they're already, well, they try to be quite compliant with the current legislation. So I don't think we'll see that big change, but I think a very visible one will be the right to data portability, that you'll be able to ask of them, hey, can you transfer my data from one from you guys to the next one? They'd also have to look, I think, into consent. Again, with the checkboxes, that you do that properly. I think that'll be something to take into account. Also, the right to transparency. So it actually says in the LANA that privacy policies have to be in clear and plain language so that it should be understandable to people. So I'm quite excited to see how the lawyers will cope with that in providing adequate privacy policies. So that is something that might also change. I think it's also in the GDPR that they'll introduce a sort of symbol system so that people can quickly see, hey, that's the type of processing that you're doing. This symbol signifies that I transferred outside, or this signifies that I'm selling it to this person. So that is something that will probably change. But it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, they'll probably, they will, of course, want to be compliant because of the fines. But I don't know if the change will be that visible, but there certainly will be certain changes. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm interested about user data as well. So today we have our mobile phones typically as your location and can be somewhere and consumed by any app on mobile device. So all these companies will need to comply with the concept of GDPR. And is there something like, for me it would be great if there would be a dashboard that you could have an overview. Okay, this company knows sensors and so on. Is that something that will also come out of that GDPR?
Well, it depends on, again, who is the controller, who is the processor there. It is possible that some companies might be joint controllers, and then they'll have to jointly indeed comply and maybe indeed provide that dashboard that you're speaking of, but then they would actually have to be really joint controllers, and they would actually have to talk to each other and set that up together. So I don't think, if you're looking for an overview of multiple controllers giving the information like in an overview, I don't think that they'll be obligated to do that in principle unless they're really really joint controllers and they decide on that. So I'm not sure about that.
Based on what we are doing is that we are providing everything that is possible needed to actually do that to the controller. Because the end responsibility is there. But you're right, in the end, like you said, it also goes directly to the processor. We have a joint responsibility. That's a big shift. The legislation is that shifting towards us. We need to do the things, like you said, to be compliant. It's not like a certification, ISO something, that you GDPR compliant. It does not exist. We're thinking about it, but it's not something which is ongoing, where you have to prove that you have done everything possible technically, process, people-wise, to protect the privacy of the individual. And then if there's a reasonable doubt, did everything possible at the time frame, the budget that you have, then there's normally another which.
Yeah, it is a risk-based deal, so you'll.
And the 25th of May, you awaken. And maybe that point as well is investigator is always based on a complaint of the data subject who was the internal
investigator. Yeah. Yeah, but they had that power now, because previously they really were sort of a paper tiger, just waiting, seeing what happens. So that definitely changes. Will be hard. Okay. Any more questions, or does that conclude it? I think there's some time left over, but...
Thank you.